to the Whiskey Podcast, a show where we sit, drink, and debate like real men do.
Hello, listeners out there in internet land. Once again, this is the Whiskey Society doing another podcast, this time with Royal Salute. Today we have, once again, Leonard.
Hello.
Javier.
Hey, what's up?
Eric.
Hello.
Myself, Frank. And we have our guest podcaster today, Chris.
How's it going?
And today, representing Royal Salute, we have, once again, Mr. Darren Hussey.
Good afternoon.
What we're going to be doing today, Darren's going to introduce us to a few different bottles of Royal Salute. We're going to do some tastings, we're going to ask some questions, and it's going to be a whole lot of fun. So, Darren, why don't you start off with talking about the background and history of Royal Salute?
Yeah.
The one thing I want to ask, make clear, because I think a lot of people in internet land out there is going to get, I think you know where I'm going with this, people are going to get Chivas and Royal Salute confused.
Yes. And that is a very, very good point. And I see on many drinks lists and bars and restaurants, Chivas Regal, Royal Salute 21. Now, it is made by the company I work for, Chivas Brothers, but in terms of the style of the blend, it is very, very different to the Chivas Regal style. And although for you guys out there in podcast land, of course, this is not visual, but I do have the old decanter and the new decanter for Royal Salute. And one of the main differences is on the current one, the new one, we've actually removed the Chivas reference on the front of the decanter. So I think from beforehand, that would have been a little bit confusing for a lot of those who enjoy Royal Salute, and they would equate it to the Chivas Regal style, when in fact it is a very, very different blend to the Chivas Regal style. Still very much influenced by Speyside, as Chris will be happy to hear.
Fantastic.
but a very, very different style altogether to the Chivas Regal style. And Royal Salute itself was first created back in 1953. And for those of you who are not from the UK, and maybe don't know the history of the Royal family in the UK, 1953, June 1953, was when Queen Elizabeth II was crowned as the new monarch, and still to this day the monarch of the United Kingdom. And as a tribute to the new Queen, that's when we created and we launched Royal Salute for the very, very first time. And that's the reason why, again, although you guys can't see, but next time you're in the store in a bar, you will hopefully see three different colours of decanter on the 21. Red, blue, and green. Now, the whiskey inside is exactly the same. And just before we came on air, we came live, we're having a quick chat with the guys here. And I've done so many tastings with Royal Salute around Asia, around the world, and many, many times I hear guys will say, I love the one in the red, but oh, the green and the blue, I don't really enjoy them. Well, tell you the truth, guys, the whiskey inside all three is exactly the same. The difference in the colour equates to the jewels on the state crown of the monarch, of the queen. So the red represents the rubies, blue, sapphires, and green, the emeralds. And that's the reason why they're different. There have been different colours over the years. Leonard and I were just joking beforehand. Used to be a brown one. There's been a black one. There's been a darker shade of blue. And there's also been, back in the 1980s, my memory serves me correct, there actually was a white one, a 25-year-old Royal Salute in a white decanter, which was, again, if my memory serves me correct, was for a royal wedding in Japan. So there have been different ones over the years, but nowadays, red, blue, and green are the core colours. The reason we start at 21, the name itself, Royal Salute 21, takes its name from the 21 gun salute. So offered to visiting VIPs, heads of states in the UK and elsewhere around the world. So that's where the name comes from. The Royal Salute itself as a blended Scotch whisky is unique. It's the only range of whiskies which starts at 21. So many ranges of whiskies will have a 12 or a 15, an 18, a 21, then stop. We start at 21 and then we go upwards. So we have a 38 years old, we have a Royal Salute, a 62 gun salute, 40 years old. We have Tribute to Honour, which is minimum 45 years old. And then back in 2003, we had a Royal Salute 50 years old, to mark, of course, the 50th anniversary of the Queen being the monarch. And for that, we only had 255 bottles available, and that was priced at the time about $9,000. Needless to say, it all sold out very, very quick. And we also have the one Tribute to Honour, which I mentioned, which we only created 21 decanters, all handmade, hand decorated with diamonds from Garrard, who were the official jewellers to the royal family in the UK. And minimum 45 years old, and we only created 21, and they were priced at, it's a duty free price, at $250,000 pop.
I'll take five.
Let me just call the office. But I believe now, I think there's maybe only, if not all of them are gone, I think maybe we only have one left.
Wow.
I think. So they have all pretty much gone. Well, it was so rare, I never had the chance to taste it.
Wow.
Colin Scott, of course, the master blender, he had the nice task of creating it and also, of course, getting to taste one all the component whiskies. And of course, the final blend itself. But I never had that pleasure. Not yet. I haven't had that pleasure. Hopefully one day.
Well, I wanted to bring up a point as well, though, because you were talking about how the name Royal Salute refers to the 21 gun salute.
Yeah.
The other part that's important there is the royal, because correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that you can't just slap a word royal in the UK to any product. It actually requires a
I'm not sure about that. Doesn't require a royal warrant, no.
Okay.
Not like the Spanish do.
Well, no, I mean, because I know that, well, in single malts, there are only three that have a royal warrant.
Right.
Royal Lochnagar, yes. Royal Bracla, and they are actually required. I remember Royal Bracla was the preferred scotch of Queen Victoria.
Huh.
I forgot the third. And as far as blended scotches go, there is really only, that I know, this Royal Salute. I mean, they can't come up with Royal something and say that that's my whiskey.
Fair enough. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. I'll find out.
And I'm saying that the fact that it was created for the Queen, and with reference to the Queen.
Yes, yeah.
Probably was one of the main reasons why they were able to.
I'm sure at some point there would have been some discussions, I believe. But I can definitely find out and let you guys know. So, should we have a little taste, first of all?
Start with the baseline?
Start with 21.
All right.
Good, good, good.
21 guns.
My first question.
I know, right? I know.
Royal Salute, do you guys share master blenders, or are they each under Pernod Ricard, just as a group? Does Chivas Regal have its own master blender versus Royal Salute versus, say, Ballantine's?
Well, Colin Scott is master blender for both Chivas Regal and for Royal Salute.
Okay.
Sorry, podcast guys, I was just pointing out Colin's signature on the bottle of Eternal Reserve. So guys, do you want to do the honours?
Yes. When do you guys open it up first?
Do that.
Chris.
All right.
Chris, we'll open up. Just give it to Chris.
Drum roll for the new guy.
So that is the new bottle that he's opening, or that is the old bottle?
That's the old bottle. Yeah.
So this is the new one?
This is the new one, yeah. So a bit more modern, a bit more contemporary, been cleaned up a little bit.
I have to admit, I do love the old bottle.
Pass it down.
Same.
You'll get used to the new one, don't worry.
Yeah. And I see the difference.
As we're doing this, what kind of tasting notes should we expect?
Well, as I mentioned before, so very, very different to the Chivas Regal style. So in terms of the 21, it's a bit more intense, a bit more spiciness, a bit more oakiness. Thanks, Chris. a bit more kind of nuttiness, a bit more smokiness as well, a bit, maybe a touch of dryness just towards the back of your palate, but again at the front of your mouth, again very much influenced by space age, so therefore a lot of sweetness, a lot of smoothness, a lot of floral characteristics also.
I also detect a bit of maritime characteristics, at least on the nose. It has a little bit of that, a little
saltiness,
bit of salt. Salt.
Sea air type of.
What kind of barrels do they use for?
Well, Ross Luke, particularly 21, it's got quite a strong sherry cask influence.
Yeah, that was
so you will pick that kind of slight, kind of sweet, kind of almost sherry, nutty dryness on the nose and also into the palate. Because we are aging these whiskies for more than 21 years.
Right.
And any whiskey selected for Ross Luke will always be at least 21 years.
Okay.
So, for example, with the next whiskey, Frank, which is the Eternal Reserve,
mm-hmm.
although it doesn't have an age per se on it, it does say age for at least 21 years.
Right.
So it's not Ross Luke 21, but the whiskies inside the blend are all aged for 21 years. And generally, not always, but generally, when you're aging whiskies for longer, you would tend to use a higher proportion of sherry cask.
Right.
Because they're larger than the bourbon barrel, and therefore they will give you a much more gradual giving of colour and flavour and texture over the very long maturation period.
Is there a reason why you guys opted not to go with an age for the Eternal Reserve?
It gives the master blender a bit more freedom. He can select whiskies which are much, much older.
Right.
But again, it has to always be 21. So that's just gives a bit more flexibility. And you'll see when you come to taste it, for me personally, Eternal Reserve is a very sweet expression of Ross Luke. For me, much, much more sweet than the 21. 21, is, as you can see, it's quite a big, rich, intense style of whiskey, which traditionally is a Ross Luke style. Right? You think also of chatting before Leonard with them about Ross Luke 38. It's a big, sherried, quite intense, very rich style of whiskey. So Eternal Reserve is a little bit of a almost kind of jump. It's like outside of the kind of traditional box of Ross Luke style.
So outside the Royal Salute, base flavors.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And still, again, very rich, very very complex, very smooth. You'll see it's an amazing whiskey.
Chris, you just put some water in your whiskey. What do you think the difference will be? Have you noticed the difference between with or without?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So having it neat, you get that faint, nutty finish on it.
Yeah.
And then when you add just a couple drops of water, you really get a lot of those same characteristics on the nose, and you get it on a long finish as well.
Yeah.
It's quite nice.
Yeah.
Mm, I agree. I think the floral characteristics also come out more under water.
It does.
It does, just a little bit. I think it just proves that every time, it's preference, of course, but a bit of water on most whiskeys really opens it up.
You start to get almost kind of halfway, kind of three quarters along your tongue.
Yeah.
You get a little bit kind of sherry, kind of nutty flavor that starts to come through, which you don't particularly notice too much without water. But with the water, it just kind of brings it to life and opens it up a lot.
Brings out the oiliness a bit.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say that, unlike a lot of other whiskeys I've tried, where I usually have a preference of either taking it neat or taking it with some water, it's usually one or the other. In this case, I'm actually pretty torn. It's different.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean that... but there's
a little comparison.
Both styles of serving, I guess, are really, really good, because with it neat, it has that warmth to it.
Yes.
And it doesn't kick. It envelops more than it kicks, which is pretty amazing, because it keeps that 40%. So it doesn't have that really, it, because it's at 40%, it doesn't have ABV, it doesn't have that harshness.
Yeah.
But it has a lot of warmth to it. So
it's
still that developing warmth that you expect from a cask strength whiskey or a higher alcohol content whiskey.
Just with better smoothness.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's not the offending alcohol fumes that you get like from it's the spicy. It just kind of lingers.
That's a very good point, Eric, because many, many people think that the longer you age your whiskey for, the more kind of intense and the more fiery it will be. But in actual reality, if we've done our job correctly, one, making good spirit, and then aging them in very high quality casks for such a length of time, the flavour should become more mellow and more smooth the older you go. So it is, although it's without water, it has got that very, very intenseness, but it's, and this will sound quite kind of contradictory, it's quite an intense smoothness, so to speak, if that doesn't sound too strange.
It's intense on the nose.
Yeah.
On the nose, you get a lot more of that sherry.
Yeah, exactly.
And then with a few drops of water, you get a lot more of those floral notes, sweeter.
Still plenty of sherry.
This is a really excellent offering. And again, it shows for those of you who have tried it before, because I've had Royal Salute before, it was my dad's go-to. The weird thing is he wasn't a big fan of Chivas Regal, but he loved Royal Salute.
Yeah.
And because of that, a lot of people, like I said, you really have to try it.
Yeah.
To see the taste, the difference in taste profiles between what Chivas Regal, the signature flavor of Chivas Regal is versus the signature flavor for Royal Salute.
And with the water now just been sitting there for a few minutes, when I taste it again, you get that very kind of slight touch of dry smokiness just at the back of your palate, which you don't find straight away, but just sitting there, I just had a little sip there. You can really get it at the back end with that slight kind of hint of dryness and smokiness.
Yeah.
But just in there in the background of a bit more structure of the blend.
Really long finish.
Yeah. Beautiful,
nice,
beautiful whiskey.
It's definitely not offending.
Not at all.
I'm sure we've all had those whiskeys here and there. I know we've had in our podcast offending.
Offensive.
Yeah, we won't say names. You can go back to the older podcast and look it up.
We'll go back to the word offending, not exactly offensive.
But yeah, we've had it in the past, and this is definitely not one of those.
No,
it's definitely one of the smoother ones you get out there, for sure.
Well, the great thing about it is if you bump into somebody that walks up to you and says, "Hey, listen, I enjoy good spirits, and I need you to recommend me a whiskey, and I only have 30 seconds before I catch my flight, so I have no way to tell you exactly what type of whiskey you could recommend to me."
Right.
If I have to shout out something to somebody, I'd shout out Royal Salute then.
Yeah.
Because it encompasses so much.
Yeah.
That it, part of it is what it tries to promote, but the other part of it is what it knocks, what it prevents, or what it, there's really no negatives on it.
Yeah. On top of that, I want to kind of build on top of what Leonard said and be a little bit more specific now. If I was a guy, asking questions, and it's either between Royal Salute and the Blue Competitor. We don't want to promote there because they're not with us today. What could you say to that, to me, on why I should pick, Royal Salute?
The main reason would be the fact that at Royal Salute, we guarantee every drop aged for at least 21 years, which no one else can do. And the whiskey you mentioned certainly cannot do that. So that for us, as I mentioned, that is very, very unique. We are the only whiskey, Scotch whiskey in the world, which starts at 21 and therefore goes older. So with any Royal Salute, you always have that guarantee. So it lets purchasers and drinkers, it gives them that safety of mind. They know, one, Royal Salute, of course, is a very high-end whiskey, therefore very, very expensive. But again, we have that guarantee of at least 21 years. So that's how I would always convince somebody on the merits of Royal Salute versus any of its competitors.
Okay.
We always have that
guarantee
of age. And I think also looking back, we had the previous podcast, which you missed, Chris, which was very, very good fun.
That was a good time.
I heard about it.
We had the selection of blends and malts. And I think today, if I hadn't told you what we're doing with Royal Salute, and I just poured 5-6 glasses of this whiskey, and we just sat and tasted it, we probably wouldn't have thought this was a blend. Might even have thought it was a malt.
Right.
Because it has those very, very intense flavours.
Yeah.
So, again, for me, that's when it comes to the style of Royal Salute, it's very powerful, but it's also very very kind of graceful style of whiskey.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have that. Sometimes you get a blended whiskey or even a malt when they're quite young, you can sense that kind of the youngness in the nose and the spirit.
Yeah.
Whereas it certainly doesn't have that. And if we had put it down without seeing what it was, I think we'd pretty much all of you, because I know you all love your whiskey and great knowledge, I think you'd have probably, maybe not guessed it was 21, but I think you'd have said this is not sure if it's a malt or blend, but it's a very, very well aged. Old whiskey.
Yes. You know, it's actually kind of what you're saying builds upon what we were going after for the last podcast of, you know, just because something is single malt doesn't necessarily make it better.
Exactly.
I mean, this right here is a fine, fine blend I would put on par with any good single malt.
Well, the problem with single, well, not problem, but one of the characteristics of single malt is you get the good with the bad.
Yes.
You're going to, you know, it's, your strengths are magnified. So if you've got this really good Speyside flavor, sweetness, and whatever, it goes great. But the problem is the weaknesses are modified as well. And a blend cuts that. It smooths everything out.
Right.
It smooths the edges.
Exactly,
To make it more cohesive.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's exactly what we have now is a really cohesive, sophisticated whiskey because of the fact that it was aged for so long.
Mm.
And it's rare. I mean, it's rare to find. You really don't get a lot of, not just blenders wanting to go out on the limb to say we make really high-end, high-age blends.
Yeah.
But to also put your money where your mouth is, like I always say, I mean, and put an age statement on it.
Yeah.
You know, it is Royal Salute 21. It's not Royal Salute with an asterisk that says minimum 21 years.
It's 21.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think with the price point, no matter where you are, I think price point compared to a lot of the single malts is going to be straight on. You're not going to say, I paid, say, $100 and I felt the $100 single malt's going to be better. No, I think it's going to give any single malt for the same price a run for its money, if not even more.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful whiskey.
Yeah.
What are we looking at price point on this, Darren?
So in duty free, Chris, on the 21, you're looking 125, 130 US.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I know going back to Frank's question too, when he's talking about the blue, if you're looking, you know, say similar price point on that too, it's completely different flavor profile.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
With the blue, you're always going to have that hint of smoke.
Yes.
Yes.
On this, there's no smoke. So if those listen out there, if you want the smoke, you wouldn't necessarily find it in this whiskey. What you're going to get is something very balanced, very smooth.
Yeah.
I would prefer this whiskey if I had to serve it to somebody who doesn't know anything about whiskey over the competition.
Yeah,
it's way more approachable.
I think it's a good intro whiskey.
Yeah,
you know, maybe the blue if someone's a smoker.
Mm.
You know, maybe, you know, because I have friends that, you know, are heavy smokers. And they prefer the smokiness of, you know, certain single malt regions.
I just want to see if Frank thinks a Royal Salute 21 at 130 US for a 70 cl of an intro whiskey, I'm going to hang about a lot more with Frank.
Well, what about? I mean, again,
you know, it's one of those things. You kind of just bring them in.
Yeah.
You know, say, "Ha, drink this. Now you like it. Now you're."
Well,
yeah.
That's perfect. I mean, exactly. If you want to reel them in, you know what? The reason I prefer Royal Salute if I had to serve it at a party or serve it to friends is the fact that it has less negatives.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. If you're a smoker, you might prefer blue. But the thing is, I can see more people tasting blue and saying, not exactly my cup of tea.
If they're not ready for it, it could be harder.
And if I don't know anything about you, well, I'll serve you a Royal Salute. I guess if you don't like Mankind, you just be like, okay, I don't like this whiskey. But I can't see anyone really saying, I find this hard to drink.
A lot of people who don't really drink whiskey a lot, if this is their first, they'd enjoy it.
They would enjoy whiskey, yeah. I think they could easily become whiskey fans with this, if this is like an intro, you know, to whiskey.
I'd like to.
By the way, we're not trying to be homers.
I just have a straight question.
Just to underline the fact of what Frank said. The members of the Whiskey Society in Manila have not been paid for this podcast.
No.
But I would like to ask you a question just really quick about Royal Salute as a brand, because you brought up a really good point. It's one of the few brands out there that says we start at 21.
Yeah.
So the fact that you've been so successful. Without an entry level whiskey, you can't say, hey, let's host a big rave and bring in bottles upon bottles of Royal Salute, because from a cost standpoint, it would be prohibitively apparent. You know, but you could do it with a Chivas Regal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Endless Chivas 12. We can have a, you know, cover night, a free drink night. But with Royal Salute, you can't. The fact that you've been able to market this so well.
I think also, at the end of the day, I'm a big, big believer that at the end of the day, it's what's in your glass. That's what will make you go back again and again.
Right.
We've all had not so good whiskies. We've all probably eaten in bad restaurants. You don't go back.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to eating or drinking, if you're going to consume something, I think one, it has to be quality, and you have to enjoy it. Because if you don't, you won't go back to it.
You know, going back to what I said about smokers might like the other, honestly though, I'm a big cigar guy. I love smoking my cigars. And something like this, I don't necessarily want smoke on smoke.
Yeah.
You know, I like this kind of sweetness and smoothness with my cigar.
Yeah.
I would prefer this. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, a little mishap here going on.
All right, I'm just going to tell the internet world, Eric just tried to pour
from a dummy bottle.
All right, it was hilarious.
He said,
here,
Frank, you can read what it actually says on the bottle.
It says right here. All right, so you know, like a do not enter sign, right? A circle with a red line through it. Dummy bottle, not for resale, contains no alcohol. Yes.
It's a porcelain bottle. I can't see through. So. It's fairly heavy. So.
You know, and for a very small niche of our podcast audience, I would like to bring that up because I did grow up with Royal Salute. My dad loved it.
Right.
For kids out there that are listening to this, even though they shouldn't, you should make your dad buy that because they can't tell how much is left when you start pouring it out.
That's true.
It is a porcelain bottle. You cannot see the amount. You can fill it with Toyo and a little something to make it look like liquor when you sneak in, but it really isn't.
Yeah, you know, maybe put like, you know, watered down Coke.
Yeah, a little water in there.
Just a little bit to hide that shot you took.
Except your dad would kill you when he tastes it.
Yes! What is going on here, son? Or daughter?
That is one of the reasons I miss the brown bottle so much, because it masks the color, the whiskey color, so well when you put a flashlight and looked inside.
Yeah.
This is a true story, podcast guest. I think it was a bar in Hong Kong somewhere a number of years ago. And we were drinking the Glenlivet single malt, and we already had a few glasses, and then there was a few of us. We purchased a bottle, and the waitress brought the bottle over, opened it, poured a few glasses. I had a drink, and I went, "That's not whiskey." She had inadvertently served us a dummy bottle.
Oh.
So of course that went straight back, and we exchanged it for a real one. I think she just grabbed one off the back bar, from display without checking.
Tip for our podcast members who are local: we get our Royal Salute at a discount. Keep that in mind.
Do you want to try the?
Before we try it, I was going to ask. You said that the 38 was sweet.
Yeah.
And you said this is sweet as well. Yeah. Would you say that this is even sweeter than the 38?
It's a different type of sweetness. For me, the 38, it's a very powerful, very kind of slightly dry, very, very sweet
sherry
influence. Yeah. Whereas here, it's more kind of soft, kind of sweet fruitiness. A lot of honey, particularly in the nose of Royal Salute Reserve.
Good God, you made a whiskey just for Chris. And I can already tell I'm pouring. It has that richer.
It's
coppery.
Yeah,
I mean, this is
the dark honey look.
Yeah.
For those of you who are familiar with whiskey, it is very much like, it is the closest thing I've seen to one of the older Aberlours.
Yeah.
Which is
rich amber color, yeah.
And I can name that because it is
one of
the groups.
Yeah, one of ours, yeah.
So if you're wondering if Chivas can do a very good sweet whiskey, they do Aberlour, so they have a lot of experience in their wheelhouse.
All right, now since we're doing this one, why don't you go ahead and tell us about its notes and so on.
So, Eternal Reserve, so it's a process which we refer to as of circular blending.
Right.
So the idea being that going forward, every batch of Eternal Reserve will have some of the original batch inside it. So we'd have 88 casks, which are used for mine blend. Then we'll take half of those casks, we'll hold them back, refill them into cask, blend it with other whiskies. The other 44 will go forward, blend with other whiskies, married, and then that becomes the batch. So each batch will always be 88 casks, so a relatively small amount. So there'll always be some held back in Strathfinder Distillery, in the Rolston Vault, for extra aging period before the next batch is produced.
And when did you guys start doing this particular one?
Just last year.
All right, so technically we're having a bit of whiskey from 2015.
Yes. Well, from minus 21.
Minus 21, yeah.
Bottled
21. Yeah. So then if you buy this 5 years from now, you're still going to have a bit from...
So you'll get those little kind of flavor nuggets from the original blend. So
okay.
Almost like... I'm no expert in the Asian cuisine, right? But I do believe that there are, particularly in China, Japan and Korea, there are certain particular soup and noodle dishes where some of the soup is almost transferred into the next batch.
Right, yes.
So that's the kind of idea, to make sure we maintain the influence of the first, very, very first batch and every batch going forward.
Okay.
So each batch would taste different?
Not hugely different, but yeah, there will be some differences. Yeah.
So would the very first batch be the best compared to something 10
years? Subjective.
That's a question for Colin Scott. I would like to step on his toes.
Alright.
There'll be different whiskies, and there'll be some which will be the same, and also there'll be different whiskies also, yeah.
So why 88 casks?
Well, 88 is a very particular in Chinese Asian culture.
Yes.
It's a very important bringer of good luck, fortune, etc.
So, is this more on the Asian market then?
It's global.
It is global.
But traditionally, Rolls Flute has had very, very high popularity in Asia.
Okay.
Although it is sold globally, traditionally, it's always been very important in this part of the world. So, particularly with the Chinese community.
Yeah, Hong Kong, I'm sure.
Exactly, yeah. Hong Kong, mainland China, Vietnam, Taiwan. So.
Right.
The bottle always looks full, so it looks really nice on your table. I know that from what I understand, this is starting out as a travel retail exclusive.
Yeah.
Is that a permanent plan, or is it in discussion to make it regular retail going forward?
At the moment, it's only travel retail. Now, whether that changes in the future, I don't know, to be honest. That would be a decision a bit higher than my pay grade, to be fair. So at the moment, it is only travel retail.
And then to go on to flavors, I bring in our resident Speyside expert, Chris.
I swear, Darren, I was listening, but I was drinking whiskey when you were talking. So I'm having it neat right now, and on the nose, you don't get that profile of it being neat. It feels like you've got the nose and you put a few drops of water in there.
Sure.
I mean, there's no bite. It's very floral. It's very sweet. You've got a lot of honey.
Yeah.
Yeah, the nose is definitely not as strong as the regular Royal Salute.
It's almost that kind of, more kind of creamy, kind of chewy, almost like kind of like honeycomb.
Yeah.
Yes.
As opposed to kind of sweet, sweet honey on its own.
So good.
Quite a lot of vanilla as well.
Yeah. This is, you know, trying a little bit of water.
Okay.
Try a little bit of water.
I always see Spey as having two distinct flavors. One being that heavily jammy, really fruity,
and
very Christmassy, very nutmeg, very all spicy type of flavor. And Aberlour is famous for that. That's
exactly
why I consider them to be this is patterned to show the printer of the card as well, but honestly, on my own, I would say Aberlour is probably the best at that type of flavor profile.
Yeah.
If you want that jammy, sweet type of whiskey but still complex and still very drinkable.
True.
This type reminds me more of going sort of like a hybrid towards Highland and Speyside, whereby you get more of that croissant taste. Like I said, more butter.
It's a butter.
More butter, more smoothness.
Yeah. More butter, less sherry.
More silky. More silky.
Yeah.
But with some water in it, it tastes like a croissant.
Mm.
And you get a little more floral. And again, you get in those types of space sets, you'll get a lot more floral profiles in there than you would. And that's the big difference, is you get more floral than it is just fruit.
So you're saying the French might like this because there's because of croissants, the butter.
No, it's floral, croissant-y. My God, you know, all you have to do is put a little
crunch.
No.
What's Napoleon Bonaparte hat?
No, one of those mimes wear.
Oh, the beret.
Yeah, beret. You just have to put a little beret on the box and there you go. But it is intense, though. That's the thing. I mean, once it hits your palate,
I think the back of the tongue, it's definitely...
And you're going to get, as an advisor, you won't feel that in the nose, so you'll smell the nose and you'll think it's a little watery.
It's a little chewy, too.
But you're going to take a good swig of it in your mouth, and then you'll realize once it hits your palate that this is a good full-strength whiskey. It's not something that's...
A little bit of almost kind of you mentioned, kind of marmalade, a little bit of kind of orangey, tangy flavor as well. And also when you have a sip, and you put your tongue against the roof of your mouth, kind of almost kind of licorice kind of flavor as well. Beautiful, stunning whiskey.
And what I love too is when a good whiskey, when the nose really matches when you get that, when you take a sip and it matches what you were smelling before, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now Javier was pointing out, and I noticed a look on his face, that when he drank it at first, he was saying it has a bit of boom. So I will.
It's something like if you sip it, it's just right. If you do more than sip it, it really overwhelms your palate.
But this brings up a really good point of. Most of the blends I've tried, this has the characteristics of single malt.
Yeah. Yes.
You know what I mean? You don't have that, as much of that encompassing roundedness as you have a real, this is a Speyside kind of declaration and punch. It's wonderful. But
beautiful,
Like I remember in the previous podcast, they were saying that, you know, since single malt is so big now, that people always overlook now the blend.
Exactly.
And I think Royal Salute as a blend, you shouldn't overlook this one.
No, not at all.
What's the price point on this?
So in duty free, so Eternal Reserve is 180 US.
Well, there you go.
Which is about, $8,500 pesos, roughly.
Well, let me put it this way. If I had to buy a 21-year-old single malt, it would be very, you know, you're right. It's right there. It's punching above its weight, I think. Because a 21-year-old good single malt, even within the Pernod Ricard family, they don't have it, but I've seen the pricing on an 18-year-old Aberlour.
Mm.
And that is way more than this undercuts it by a good margin.
This is a special occasion, birthday, Christmas gift. So if anybody I know is listening, I would love this.
And also, as an exclusive for the podcast, because I think you guys are probably some of the first people in the Philippines to actually enjoy Eternal Reserve. It's not yet in duty-free in the Philippines.
Oh, wow.
So it's in the process of being registered. So hopefully before the end of this calendar year, it should be available travel retail duty free in the Philippines. So I had to hand carry that from Hong Kong when I flew over on that.
We're on
Tuesday morning.
Cheers.
We're
very honored. I can't wait to try and smuggle that out of it.
No, we didn't say that.
I mean,
editor.
I look forward to that. You know, that's one of the things, just on a side note for people who might not know this. If you are a frequent traveler and listen to this podcast, Philippine Duty Free is hands down one of the best places to pick up any Chivas Brothers product. If you have a business trip, a multi-city business trip coming up, and you're thinking of, and you're going by the Philippines, save your purchases to when you come to the Philippines, because you will get an amazing value here at the Duty Free here. I'm not joking. You get... The packages they have here are ridiculous.
What's the price difference between here and Hong Kong?
If you go by duty free, it's huge because of the way they package it.
15-20%?
Easily.
Wow.
Because, look, I get a liter, pricing wise, I get a liter of Chivas Regal 12 for about $21.
Wow. Really?
Yes. And they give you a free suitcase to carry to carry it out of there with, because they're going to stuff it. Unless you're really lucky and you get a bottle of Chivas Old display.
Or a General Reserve complimentary.
That's what I'm hoping for when you said it's coming here. I'll be looking at the duty free to see what kind of marketing they have. And just so you know, that actually happened. I came here, we went to duty free, and they offered 3 liters of Chivas Regal. If you buy 3 liters of Chivas Regal, we will give you a bottle of Chivas Oldest and Finest for free.
Wow.
Oh. Well.
Unfortunately, at the time, we thought, man, they must be having trouble selling that, so that must be not that great. I wish I had just...
Skill by error.
Yeah, I wish
I
that was one of the few times I wish I'd dragged my 70-year-old mother there to be like, guess what you're carrying? We need your passport to buy that, too. Because there's a limitation on how many bottles each human can carry.
It feels better once you open it. That's what I'm saying. It is like a single malt. You let it breathe a bit.
Yeah,
it opens up. The finish is unbelievably good because it has a buttery finish that lingers and leaves a wonderful. I wouldn't say smoke. It's not smoky at all. But like a lingering.
The bit of smoke is just the back of the 21, but in terms of none at all.
But a little bit of woodiness. That's a better way to say it. Yeah.
Bernice, what do you think?
I haven't heard of it. Thinking of Boomer.
That's funny.
A Boomer.
So after the Boomerang, what do you think?
I'll think.
There you go. Off whiskey, but part of Royal Salute. One thing I noticed by going to the website is that you guys really like sponsor polo out of all sports.
Yeah.
Polo. Why? You know, that's compared to other, you know, other liquors will do other, you know, like, more mainstream sports.
It's the royal sport.
This is
the royal
sport.
This
is the, I mean, yeah.
This is the royal sport.
So in fact, with Royal Salute, as you mentioned, Frank, we do a lot of partnerships with Polo, and also the fact that both Prince William and Prince Harry both play Polo. So we're involved a lot with their charity, which is Centre Ballet Charity.
Okay.
Which helps a lot of underprivileged kids in Africa.
Right.
So a lot of what we do in terms of those events is helping their charity. And it also, of course, keeps the connection with the royal family.
Okay.
So that's why, not just in the UK, but around the world, we do lots of polo events.
Right.
Or sponsor lots of polo events. And also, the crowd you attract to polo tends to be your more affluent crowd of people.
Yes, that's right.
And of course, Royal Salute is pretty expensive whiskey.
Right.
So it's not everyone in the world who can afford to purchase Royal Salute. So it works very well for us, one, in terms of talking to very high net worth individuals,
right,
but at the same time, we're helping charities of the royal family.
Have you ever sponsored a polo event here in Manila? We do have our own polo.
Yes, we have a couple of years ago. I don't think we've done it now for a couple of years, but we have done before, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, because, you know, I've been to a polo event here, was it late last year? Last year, and that was a fun one. It was sponsored by a single malt whiskey, not really you guys.
Right.
But, you know, maybe the next time you guys sponsor, I definitely I'm not going to be there again.
What happened
at
Polo?
Yeah, what happened? Go ahead, Leonard, tell them what happened.
Well, it was sponsored by many companies, including...
No, but that particular...
No, but I'm just saying, including a single malt supplier, who did the typical routine of serving cruddy stuff first and saving the good stuff for people that bothered to watch the entire match.
Yeah, as people like three quarters through.
So Frank and myself, being whiskey aficionados, patiently waited and waited until Frank's girlfriend said, "I can't wait anymore," and he walked into the car. The minute he left, they started serving.
so
you can see
the 21-year-old there.
Yeah.
And so Leonard goes ahead and gives me a call and says, "Hey, they're serving the 21-year-old. Now, I'm just in my shorts and flip-flops, you know, it was a hot day at the polo club.
I have never seen a human being in flip-flops. We're on the uphill. Because polo club's on a gradient.
Yeah.
Run uphill, through steps, past people, through a crowd, and show up for a glass of whiskey.
That's right.
As Frank did that night.
And I got my double shot right away. 21.
Double.
The
Oh, they...
It started with a double.
Yeah, no, we finished with 21 pretty quickly, so they started going back down.
Yeah.
After a while, the bartenders were... Well, we were hoping to serve other people, but Frank's kind of bulky, so... And they started giving him quadruples to go away.
Yeah.
Okay, it went from double to triple. Then, yeah, like the 15, all of a sudden it went to triple. And like, you know what, I'm going to keep on coming back here. Just give me a quadruple.
No, they just started serving quadruples. Yeah. So I'd be like, please don't come back for 10 minutes.
Just give me the...
No. And I didn't come back for 10 minutes. I came back in 5 minutes.
Exactly. That's when they realized they should have started serving you in highballs.
Yeah, well, I think we ended up getting a bottle, too, at the table. I'm pretty sure we did. Well, because of me. But yeah.
Unfortunately, it was being sent from a kiosk, so he could block the entrance.
Yeah.
But again, this is really wonderful. It's a surprise as a blend.
Yeah,
very surprising.
Yeah.
But to highlight how important, how fortuitous an event this is, when did the 38 come out?
Ooh. The 38 would have been... No, I don't know. I'm struggling through my memory now. I think it's either about 2003, 2005, maybe.
Well, even in 2005, if I understand it correctly, that was your last regular offer, your most recent regular offering before this. You had some limited editions.
Well, we also have.
Because you had your 100 casts.
Yeah. We have Rolf the Clan Tribute.
But those are all limited edition.
No, that's ongoing.
Oh, is it not a project?
Ongoing, yeah. We have the 60-gun salute, which is minimum 40 years old, which is ongoing. And we have the Master Blender's Reserve, which is ongoing as well.
When did that come? Could you talk more about that? That actually is one of the few I haven't heard about, isn't that many.
For the moment, that's mainly sold in Taiwan. Yeah.
Because we need to take a road trip there,
okay. Or a plane trip.
Whiskey Live Taiwan is it in a couple weeks?
I think it's just passed. Well, actually, no, you see that, because I think there's now two. There's Whiskey Live, excuse me, and there's Whiskey L.
Ah.
I think Whiskey L has just happened about 3-4 weeks ago, I think, in Taiwan. Yeah. Because Shanghai was 2 weekends ago. Or Whiskey Ale, yeah.
So do you plan to keep diversifying in the future?
We're always looking to, of course, introduce new products, because if we stand still... Then
well, that was actually my point for the longest time. I mean, Rosalud has been, as you said, from 1953.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously I wasn't around then. I mean, from the 80s when I started growing up into the 90s. I don't remember anything except Rolf Salute 21.
No, exactly, yeah.
And also from 53 to like 90 something, they had one offering. And they were able to do really good market penetration and brand recognition off one offering.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was Muddy Brown. Because I remember, man, the blue was unbelievably rare, and I don't remember anything else except the dark blue and the brown. And now all of a sudden, like, I mean, you're naming stuff that I wasn't aware of that. I either thought was limited, or just for the master servers are just off my radar.
Yeah,
so, do you plan? I mean, what are your plans? Do you know what their plans are for the future?
I don't know the plans for the future. I'm sure there will be plans for line extensions for different products. But again, that's.
If anyone in senior planning and Pernod Ricard is listening to this podcast, if you could make your 100 casks part of regular production, I'd be really happy. Just saying, it was 100 casks was a previous, and it was a recent.
Recently, previous offering. Yeah.
So it wasn't exactly limited, it was off for quite some time.
Sure, so 100 cask. Was, as it states on the label, 100 casks of whiskies which were used in the blend. So a lot of people thought it was 100 whiskies, and it wasn't. It was one selection of whiskies aged in 100 casks, and then bottled in different batches. But always 100 casks of whiskey in the blend.
And it was probably my favorite, and still is my favorite overall salutes.
Is it the same process as this, where you divide by half? 50?
No. It was just 100 casks, married,
wow.
And then bottled, yeah.
So you can find one, buy it, and keep it.
Is
yeah.
it all proportional, or is it, like, different?
It'll be in terms of the blend itself.
Yeah.
The whiskey's inside. They would, of course, they would change from time to time, so not necessarily always the same blend. But the important part is the blend should taste pretty much the same every time. Of course, by the batch process, there will be, by definition, there'll be some variances in the flavour. But again, it shouldn't be too big a variance. If you're one batch, which is lovely and sweet and smooth and a more kind of spacing influence,
yeah.
The next batch is just like a big smoke monster. Obviously, that's not supposed to happen, and that didn't happen. It was always very much in the same style, but of course there would be differences from time to time. But it was a beautiful, beautiful style. I enjoyed that on many, many occasions. And this, again, it's a true story. This will go back now a few years. I was in Georgetown in Malaysia. Had a few events there. And then afterwards, went to a couple of bars to meet the owner, say hello, a couple of drinks with them. And one of the guys, I can't remember his name, Malaysian Chinese, one of the bar owners there. And he was desperate to find, batch number one. And I said, well, tomorrow's summer, and that's now a few years ago that we launched 100 casks. I said, I'll check with Scotland if we have any left. I doubt we will do though. So I phoned Scotland, I think, the next day, and they almost kind of laughed at me down the phone. I said, damn, well, that's years ago. We don't have any left. I didn't think he would do, but I promised I would ask the question. So I've asked the question, I can now go back and tell the gentleman that we don't have any more. And then about 6 months later, I was in Taiwan, in Kaohsiung. And Pernod Ricard Taiwan had a store there, mm-hmm. And I was doing a tasting event there. I think it was on the Glenlivet. I just happened to look at the shelves, and they had batch number one.
Wow!
And also batch number two.
Wow!
And I said, I'm actually looking for them for a guy in Malaysia. So I phoned my colleague from Pernod Ricard Malaysia. I said, Bernard, I found these two bottles. Does the gentleman still want them? He says yes. I can't bring them back. I'm hand carry only. I can't bring them back. I said, can you ask the guys? So I'll be in Taiwan next week on holiday, so I'll pick them up. So the guy eventually got batch one and batch two.
Wow.
Because he was saying to me, I'll pay for them. I said, sir, it's not a question of paying. We don't have them left. You know, and sometimes money doesn't solve all your problems. I'll pay you thousands. No, it's not that I don't want to sell them. I don't have them. But we found them in Taiwan. And he eventually got them.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's great. What's his reason for wanting?
He had all the batches. I can't remember how many batches it was, but he had all the batches.
Wow.
Except for one and two.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's similar to like that Japanese whiskey where it's like the deck of cards.
Yeah.
So he's done the same thing.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's crazy.
So at the end of the day, he was very, very happy. So. And I bumped into him a couple of years later when I was back in Georgetown. Oh, thank you very much. Very happy. I got my full selection now, 100 casks.
So, Leonard, I saw you put an ice cube.
Yes.
How's it taste?
I don't know. I'm not as big a fan. It numbs it. It mellows out too much.
The
crunch harshness.
Yeah. Okay.
But the problem is, I think that it also mellows out too much of the flavor.
Right.
It dilutes too much of the flavor of it. That I like about this, which is really that buttery silkiness, especially on the finish. The one thing I love about this, and I can't say enough, is the length of this buttery finish. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's exactly why I didn't want to put ice in the first place, because I just felt it was just delicate enough.
Yeah.
With
I
just
wanted to try it just to see.
Fair enough. I mean, that's a fair assessment.
And I wanted to bring it down a bit just to see what would happen with the temperature down more than. That's why instead of water, it was ice.
So you're saying this is not the kind of whiskey where you'd put a glass full of ice and then pour whiskey on? Is that what you're saying?
Definitely not. I don't think. No. It's actually. It might be okay with ice if you're not. Because it does have that punch of a single malt. So if you're not ready or you're not willing to take that kind of intensity.
Right.
Ice and then putting that in would work. I really wouldn't like to try just water, though. Because I think the lower temperature smooths it out a bit.
So maybe cold water, then.
Or cold water, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because
but
ice might be too
water,
much.
Yeah, but room temperature water, I don't
not
think
enough.
Work.
If
well,
you go
I think
ice, would you go 1 cube?
Yeah. And if you still want to add more, go ahead if you're an idiot. But yeah, but yeah, I mean, room temperature water, I think, would bring the worst of both worlds. You'd dilute the front taste without actually helping helping smooth it down any.
Beautiful. Mm.
But Darren, going back to age, okay, because I've this is something that I've always wondered. Like, I don't know, like you guys have the same practice as the other distilleries, but when you say 21 years, does this mean like on the 21st birthday of the cask or like the aging, you start to bottle it, or
not,
do you wait like
not necessarily? We would. I get it varies because they'll check the cask to make sure they're at the correct maturation level, the correct flavour, etc. So although we say 21 years old for Rosa 21, it doesn't mean that every cask in there is 21 years old. Well, it could well be casks which are 22, 23, 24,
right,
whatever age, but at least always over 21. So it's not always, I see Eric, on the 21st birthday,
yeah,
so to speak. It'll probably be a little bit after that, and in some cases, a few years after.
So,
oh, wow.
It's a
yeah.
minimum 21.
Minimum 21, yeah.
Because there are other blends out there that say they're a 12, and then, but they've admitted where they put whiskeys that are maybe, you know, 3, others at 25, and, you know, the blend itself, and they say, in the end, it's 12. But
well, legally, if they say it's 12, every drop must be at least 12 years.
Right. Well.
So there's no average, for example.
Legally.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's only
so,
legally in Scotland.
Well, we're very protective of what we do in Scotland. So maybe that's not Scotch whiskies which are doing that, but for us in Scotland, if we have the age on it, it has to be that minimum age.
But it's not the day of. Like it could be like 12 and a half.
Oh yeah, of course.
Even
yeah.
For
yeah.
First single malt.
Yeah, it could be.
Okay.
I mean, in theory, you could have a 21-year-old whiskey, which is no whiskey, which is 21, but it could start at 22,
yeah,
just because maybe the cask of age that's slightly different rate. But again, in that type of situation, not that I know that happens very often, but if it did happen, you're not going to change all your labels and all your advertising for that one batch. It's still your 21-year-old whiskey, or your 12, even though it may all be 13 or 14, for example. So it's still your Shivers 12, your Rosa 21, although in reality it could well be the case that some of the whiskies are not that age.
Right.
But in most cases they would tend to be, because you know from experience, once it's aged for 21 years or 25 or 38, whatever the age happens to be, how the whiskey should taste after that age. Of course there will always be exceptions,
right,
but they will know pretty much that they will get, you know, X, Y, Z flavours from that cask or X, Y, Z flavours from this cask. So it'll always be, at least in this case, a minimum 21.
And I want to bring this up again. I brought this up in the last podcast and I'd like to bring it up again now since we're dealing with different age statements. In that Pernod Ricard is quite unique in the sense that they have a lot of overlap between their single malts and their blends.
Mm.
You guys are one of the very few that can say that we have a 21-year-old single malt.
Yeah.
At a 21-year-old blend,
yeah,
and even a 25-year-old single malt at a
yeah.
25-year-old blend, which is
yeah.
real. So how do you compare and contrast, say, this Rosa Louis 21 with, say, your main straight product, which is Louis single malt, say, a Glenlivet 21?
For me, when it comes to malts and blends, I always find the malts more individual. You're getting a snapshot of one distillery. So you're getting that certain style of one distillery. So in the case of the Glenlivet, lots of sweetness, lots of fruitiness, but that will then change from 12, 15, 18, 21, 25, when by different aging times, by different cask selection.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, 21, Glenlivet 21, is a bit, for me compared to Rosslyn, it's a bit more oaky. It's a bit slightly more dry.
Yes.
And also the fact that in a blend, of course, you have the grain whiskey, green whiskey, so you're getting that very kind of smooth, kind of rounded texture. Whereas in a single malt, for me, it's a very different texture. It's a more kind of it's like hard to describe like having a glass in your hand. It's a more kind of heady texture.
I agree completely.
So it's a very, very different way of enjoying Scotch whisky. You know, as you know from last time, we all enjoy both malts and blends, but I think we understand, you know, how they're different and the reasons for that. So it's that very, I don't want to say narrow taste, because single malt, it's not a narrow taste, because you get lots and lots of flavour in a single malt. But it's a more, I'm not going to kind of contradict myself now, it's a more kind of individual style, as opposed to when you take a blend, like in this case Royal Sloot, you're getting lots and lots of different layers of flavour, different little kind of nuggets of flavour from different distilleries and different regions, which you don't really find in a single malt, but you're still getting huge, huge amounts of flavour, but a more kind of narrow selection in a way, so to speak. If you take a horizontal line, and you take a vertical line, the vertical line is your single malt. Mm-hmm. And that horizontal line of a blend, you've got all these different vertical lines, so you've got that little bit of influence coming from all the different whiskies in the blend, which you're not getting so much in a single malt, although you're still getting a huge, huge amount of flavour in single malts.
Well, this is more of like what the master blender feels what you should have versus the distiller is just that particular. Like, you know what, no, try this.
The reason I was asking is because when we did this last podcast, we did that comparison with 12 to 15 year old whiskies. So when you take a 12 to 15 year old blend, like a Chivas 12 or Chivas 18, and you compared it to the Glenlivet's, the Glenlivet 12, Glenlivet 15, Glenlivet Nadura.
Yeah.
There's that harshness in that youth that you have in the single malts that evens out a lot. That's why I was saying, I was trying to compare it, because when you compare a 21-year-old blend to a 21-year-old single malt, you get a lot more of a complexity. The single malt makes a lot of gains in complexity that the blends have from the start, because they're different blends. But now all of a sudden you get into a Royal Sloot versus Glenlivet 21, where all of a sudden you have a Glenlivet, as you said, it has an oakiness, it has a lot more complexity. That you can't say, oh, well, there's complexity, you know, in the younger blends. Now you have a 21, and that's why I was trying to compare it, how it works out. And it's the same thing at Aska versus when you have a Chivas Regal 25. You also have a Glenlivet 25 as it gets older,
right?
You know, you can't just say that the complexity is there, because the complexity exists whether it's malt or whether it's a single malt.
I think when it comes to blends, and what you said is kind of triggered what I was trying to say, actually, trying to explain. Mm. I think when you get to an age blend, such as this age, it's a more smooth complexity.
It is. Mm. Okay.
As opposed to that more intense complexity that you find in a single malt 21. Mm-hmm. Is what I was trying to say, rambling beforehand.
It just takes another sip of whiskey and it comes right.
Exactly. Inspiration of the glass, Chris.
That's what I was wanting to ask, because a lot of people will ask that question.
Yeah.
I can understand why I want to buy a blended 12-year-old versus a single malt 12-year-old. I'm afraid that I'm kind of going fartless. And no, I mean, it's a good way. It's good.
Bring it up again.
But again, it has a lot of immaturity, because of its immaturity.
Yeah.
The flavors just weren't melding. And you can't have that with a blend, because you're forcefully melding the blends into what you want your taste profile to be.
But I think as well, podcast world, I've just poured a little glass here of Eternal Reserve, and it's very, very rare that I would drink whiskey neat. This blend, I could drink neat, whereas a single malt at 21 years old, I would struggle to drink it neat. Not because it's bad, just because, again, it's those very, very intense flavours.
Right.
And that's why I would tend to add water to the malt.
Fair enough.
But the role of the blender in the case of blending Royal Sloot is to create that very complex, very smooth, still very rich in flavour, but again, different from that individual style of the single malt.
I have a question. Now, between Royal Sloot, I mean, you've obviously had a lot more of the different types of Royal Sloots than us. Could you say, maybe it's no, but could you say there's a particular flavor that is common between all Royal Sloots?
Yes and no.
Okay. I love it.
Well, Eternal Reserve, when we're tasting this now, obviously, is very, very new.
Yeah.
So prior to this, we had 21, we had 100 casks, 38. I think you could have probably, you'd have talked more a kind of very intense, rich, kind of oaky, slightly smoky style. I think now with Town Reserve, that flavour profile is going to be changing.
Yes.
A little bit. Because for me, this is more very sweet, very smooth, very floral. You mentioned the honeycomb,
yeah,
the sweetness, a bit of pears, a bit of vanilla. So for me, this is a little bit of a kind of step outside the more traditional style,
yeah,
of what we expect from Royal Salute. So I think there's maybe a conscious decision by the blender to maybe not reinvent the wheel, but just offer something a little bit different outside the traditional kind of oaky, more kind of smoky.
Kind of go off a little bit.
Yeah, maybe,
yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we talked about this after the podcast last time, where I think you hosted an event for Shivas quite a few years ago. Not that far, but a few years ago.
I'm not that old.
Yeah, but you give these chocolates, and the chocolates, with the smokiness of Shivas really went well.
Exactly, yeah.
Would chocolate also go well with, to bring out flavors? Or what would you eat to bring out the flavors of Royal Salute?
I think in this case of the Town Reserve,
yeah,
if you had, because again, for me, it's got a big, strong flavor, that kind of vanilla, kind of creaminess in there. So if it was to be chocolate, for example,
right,
it'd have to be a more kind of vanilla-flavored chocolate to really bring out the kind of more soft, sweet flavors.
So like a white or a milk chocolate?
I'd probably go for a kind of light kind of milk chocolate.
Yeah,
I think
dark
chocolate might be a little bit too bitter, too strong. For here, Volcan chocolate, the kind of creamy texture that you find in this one. So more that kind of light milk chocolate, a lot of kind of sweet vanilla flavor. Perfect with this whiskey.
This particular one. Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of pairings, I was going to bring mooncakes to pair
with. And it's that time of year.
I have a bunch sitting at home that were gifted to me. But
go.
I have.
You live down the road. Come on.
I have tried mooncakes.
Let's
leave it at that.
Hold on. To be fair, I've lived in Hong Kong. What kind of mooncakes are we talking about?
Yeah, because there's like the red bean.
No, there's the red bean, there's lotus paste.
The regular.
The red
cake with
the red
egg
bean
in the middle.
I think it's red bean.
Is it
the standard.
Brown, or is it like light beige, or is it like red?
Beige to dark.
Okay, it's lotus seed.
I'm going to a mooncake.
No, that's
a week, so I'm new to this whole thing, I've only started dating my girlfriend last few years, and it will be my third mooncake festival. It's different.
Yeah,
it would make a good pairing.
I think it would.
Yeah.
They're very much an acquired taste, let's put it that way.
Really, it's sweet.
It's a strong flavor,
it's
though.
For Westerners in particular, it's
really?
A very, very strong
flavor. Yeah. I mean, if you didn't grow up with it or anything like that, I can only do so much, and I'm really done with it. Yes.
Yes.
You're third culture. You grew up in Asia. I'm 20 some years in the U.S. Then come here. That's a different ballgame.
Yeah.
But there are some aspects that Eric brought up about mooncakes that would match well. And
they would go well. I like mooncakes, and I think this would go well.
No, you know
like
why? It's the oiliness.
It's
with the red bean, maybe.
Because one of the things I would match with this when we were talking about chocolate. Is an orange flavored chocolate.
It
had the Eternal from Eternal Reserve.
But food pairing is always interesting, though, because
it is.
What do you pair with whiskey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
not
easy.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to different dinners
whiskey.
And chefs will come out and say,
but
I winged it.
I always think you can look at it two ways, and I've had a lot of whiskey dinners, and sometimes a chef will sit down, we'll send whiskey samples, he'll sit down, he'll nose and taste them, and he'll create dishes paired to the actual dish. And sometimes the pairings they're amazing. Or you take the other view, if you've got great whiskey and you've got great food, enjoy them both. They don't necessarily have to pair.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned wine, Chris, and to be honest, I drink more red wine than I drink white wine.
Right.
Maybe because I think red wine is more close in style to whiskey. Tannin flavour, etc. And when I'm drinking a family meal and I'm having wine, it doesn't matter what I'm having. If I'm having fish or having poultry, I'll have red wine. because I enjoy the flavor.
Yeah.
So you can look at it two ways, and some pairings are just amazing, and some can be mentioned a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
Alright, guys, you hear a little bit of noise in the background. We have another guest that is about an hour and a half late or so. Mr. Johnson Lee.
Yes, hi, how are you guys?
Sorry to take off real quick, Darren. Johnson, real quick, talk about whatever you want. You know, you're here.
Johnson is our resident...
Well, he's a resident whiskey
aficionado
slash proprietor slash
and he knows
marketers.
Yeah,
you better drink this before it goes.
It's
almost done.
Yeah, we're done with the internal reserve. We've been sipping on that all day.
And it's amazing.
Anyway,
it's very close to something.
I learned from the master. Actually, I met Darrell, I think, back in 1998.
Wow. Not 19, after that, I think.
You were quite new in the company at that time, so and then over the years, I think I've been visiting some of the whiskey shows in the region. I was able to meet you again in Taipei.
Yeah.
And I always love to meet this guy. He always has something special for me to try.
Nice.
Again, Johnson Lee has not been paid for this podcast.
What we're having today is a 21 in the Eternal Reserve. What you're holding right now is a.
We just went right for the gullet, no baseline, just have a good drink.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was saying, because of the intensity of it, knowing what I know now, I would have served the Eternal Reserve first. I mean, 21.
Yeah.
Really? Well, the only reason I honestly want to go 21 first is that's your standard. No matter what, that is your typical...
No, that's a very good point.
But, going back, say, for someone that's already tasted both, hey, let's start off with the Eternal Reserve.
No, well, I'm just...
But you got to have a baseline.
Yeah. No, I'm just going purely on taste.
Yeah.
No, Frank has a very good point. If you're talking about, based on company, what's their standard or what their signature is supposed to be, what they want you to think, what they want you to believe, or what they want you to target, to say, this is Royal Salute.
But I think I think as well, if we had started with the Eternal Reserve and then moved to the 21, we wouldn't have had the chance to really enjoy the sweetness and the smoothness of Eternal Reserve. So I think doing it after the 21 actually gives us more opportunity, because we then compare and contrast back to the 21.
All right, because I thought that sweetness there was quite pronounced. That's what I was saying. When I first tasted the Eternal Reserve, I found it really jarring, just because my taste buds were prepared for the 21.
Right.
Or influenced by the 21, so the contrast was a bit harsh in that sense.
Really? I felt, honestly, for me, it was a bit more reserved than the, standard. For me, the Royal Salute, boom. It's almost not, I would say, next level, but it's... it's a different step.
Mm.
And that's why going with the standard 21 to the Eternal Reserve was actually, for me anyways, the better way to start off.
No, it's like anything, you gotta warm up your palate.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But Johnson, what do you think? I mean, you've got the more refined palate amongst us.
Normally I like full bodied whiskey.
Right.
Whiskey that has a long finish. Sweetness. I'm assuming there's a small sherry in the blend.
It will be, yeah.
But at the same time, I still taste the barley sweetness in it. So it's not 100% sherry sweetness.
No.
It's a mix of barley and sherry sweetness. So I think it's a very, very good blend.
Yeah.
This, I just saw the bottle. It's 40% alcohol. And it's without an age statement, so sorry for being late. Maybe
no worries. Actually, in case of the Eternal Reserve, for any Royal Salute, age 21 years.
Oh.
So his age was 21. It's not Royal Salute 21, but for any Royal Salute, it's always at least 21.
Could you specify, tell your webmaster for Royal Salute? Because I didn't know either. Actually, that was one of my questions. You answered it.
Yeah.
But... honestly, my question was, you have a 21, you have a 38. What is this one? So, it's not clear. So
yes. But always at least 21. So again, there will be whiskies in the blend which are older than 21.
Right.
But the blend is not necessarily always going to be the same component whiskies, because the blend or the components can change.
Right.
But the important part is it comes back to how you should taste it.
So no matter what, roast loop will be at least 21.
At least 21.
So
there'll
never be an underage. Legal age.
Legal age.
Depends which country you're in, scenario.
US legal age, yeah.
No, for the time being, it's always guaranteed at least 21.
At this point in time.
Yeah.
So, with Johnson being here, there's other questions we could obviously ask.
Which is?
Don't
ask my age.
No, Johnson
is a no age statement.
Over the
birthday.
Happy birthday.
Two days ago.
Cheers.
Cheers.
This is my celebration.
Yeah, the anniversary of his 21st.
Well, yeah, it's an anniversary of turning 21.
Well, as you say, older than some, younger than most.
That's right.
So, one of the things that's been going on lately that's coming up big here within Manila is finally someone is doing and bringing together a bunch of whiskeys for people to try. Can you, Johnson, being a proprietary of whiskey and being an expert in who you are, could you go on about this certain event that's coming up?
Okay. I think it's prudent to explain my background first.
Sure, please.
So my family has been into the alcoholic trade for more than 40 years. And I've been pushing for me, choices is always... you have more choices, then it's going to be better for the industry. I've been traveling abroad and I see a whole different brand names, different distilleries, not just from Scotland, even from the US, Ireland, and recently Japan and Taiwan is starting to be a significant producer in the whiskey industry. So the main objective is to introduce all these brands, whether big or small, and introduce it to the market and let the market decide which one they like. Because in the end, a lot of people ask me, for you, which is the best whiskey? The reality is, that question for me is like asking someone, which is the best cuisine?
Right.
So everybody has a different answer.
Okay.
So this year, we decided to bring in Whiskey Live. Whiskey Live originated from UK. Whiskey Live is being run now in 19 different countries. So my company, Grand Cru Wines and Spirits, got the license to organize Whiskey Live. We call it Whiskey Live Manila. It will take place this coming October 28th and 29th. It's a Friday and Saturday. Mm-hmm. At Shangri-La Fort.
PGC, okay.
Yeah, so... so what people can expect during the show is, of course, as many brands, as many whiskey brands available in the country.
Okay.
It will be housed under one roof. So basically, technically, you can experience different flavors, mm-hmm. Whiskey from different countries. It's a way for consumers to connect directly to the brand or
right.
to the distilleries. So all the questions that you have about a specific flavor profile, about regions from Scotland. Basically, you can approach the booth of the brand.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you can approach Royal Salute or Chivas Brothers.
Right.
Dara will be here.
Yes, sorry, guys. I'll be back in Manila for that event also. So if you have any questions, one about whiskey, our whiskeys, or maybe even about Frank. Just please feel free and come and see me on our booth at Whiskey Live Manila.
Yes.
So you may have more questions.
So basically this event is it's an opportunity for whiskey aficionados
mm-hmm.
to connect directly to the distilleries.
Not just aficionados though, just your casual drinkers.
Are interested.
Right.
So it's a way for you to connect directly to the brand.
Okay.
You can ask me as many questions as you like.
Approximately how many distillers or labels, not just labels will be there?
So
There's going to be 23 whiskey brands,
okay,
or whiskey booths, but each booth, they can showcase more than one brand.
Right.
Like for example, Royal Salute,
mm-hmm.
they own 16 distilleries, and they own more than 10 blended whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be best for Darren to answer how many.
Yeah, we're just working on finalizing which ones we're going to have at Whiskey Live Manila. We will have a very wide selection of both blends and single malts.
Okay.
And of course, all of our malts, well, with the exception of Scapa, are all Speyside single malts. So we'll have quite a big range there. For Chris in particular, a wide range of one Speyside single malts, but also our blended scotches, be it Royal Salute, Chivas Regal, Ballantine's. We'll have a very wide range of whiskies there for all you guys to come along and enjoy and taste.
I've been looking forward to Ballantine's. I haven't had that in a while.
Yeah, Ballantine's.
Yeah.
And there's no cutoff, meaning like
basically you can drink as many whiskey as you like. But in my experience, normally the perception is you'll get wasted. But my experience attending Whiskey Live events in the region, I actually really enjoy it and I don't get drunk.
Nice.
Because what I enjoyed the most is talking to guys like Darren,
right,
asking a lot of questions, specific questions for a specific distillery. I enjoyed the most the conversation. And it's actually surprising. You can stand up for 5 straight hours.
Wow. So what time does it start? What time does it end?
The event will start 5 p.m. and end 12 midnight.
Midnight,
yes.
Yeah.
But for the first 2 hours, we're giving liberty to people in the trade, like you guys, and people in the press, and some VIP guests.
So really 7 to...
5 to 7, it will be open for VIP guests,
VIPs, okay,
press, and people in the trade. And
okay,
7 onwards, it will be open for
everybody.
Can I bring my thermos flask?
Oh, sorry.
You're going to make
it all question,
I'll be bringing my iPad to watch the soccer game from Scotland.
For the labels, you may not know this, but for the labels, will people be able to buy bottles there?
Yes, yes.
Yes, okay.
Yes. This is very interesting because normally distilleries, they have, if you are familiar with whiskey, especially single malt, most distilleries, they offer limited bottlings.
Right.
And this is what I'm really interested in every time I attend Whiskey Live event. I remembered, I think it was 3 years ago when I met you in Whiskey.